Hi, Hank.
Hello, Otto.
We are continuing the exploration of math and music, and you suggested that for this episode it would be nice to talk about some of the practical exercises which can be done to regulate the body. We've already talked that indirectly and more directly in the past when you mentioned the direct relationship between singing, breathing, body vibrations and health. And we started this conversation with a preamble in which you mentioned a bit about blood regulation, the Merkaba exercise, the Kundalini breathing technique, and the Iceman body immunity training. So for the people listening in on this later, those will be quite surprising words being heard together like this. But for you, they are the immediate connection to what you already started to explain before I said, okay, let's record this. So now that we have pressed the record button wonderfully well, let's get into this story about math and musics, cell communication, but more specifically about our sensation of body vibration and the kind of exercise which we can do to enhance that. Where would you like to start? Because we have a couple of themes here. We have the Merkaba breathing, the fire training, the Iceman exercises, and so on.
Yeah, holotropic breath, yeah.
Would it be easiest to start from the perspective of singing? As we are in this theme of math and music, we know that cellular communication is the essence. Singing is one of the experiences of it. Breathing directly connects to that, and you take it from there?
Yeah. Okay. Let's start from the singing. Wonderful. So if we start with the singing, then actually we put a vibration on our breath. So we have the in-breath, the intention. What are we going to sing? You breathe it in on the in-breath. And then you start singing on the out-breath. That's normally done in our culture. So what happens then actually? So we have the in-breath, the emotions, the sensations, the beliefs, your inhibitions, your positive things, your negative things, the whole thing. The things you reject, the things you feel well with. So it's mainly around beliefs, the belief how big you are, how strong you are, the belief how much money you have on your bank account, how safe do you feel, and all that kinds of things are already there. But you and then you make the in-breath and you take the inspiration in, and that's your inspiration. And then on the out-breath, you sing, and that's your aspiration, what you want to do with your inspiration. So that's actually one cycle of a very magical carpet ride. And we do that about a billion times in a lifetime. And we are not much aware of it in average. And so when you start to sing, you have a certain pitch, a vowel, and on that you start to produce all kinds of overtones. And that's a very specific signature, like your own DNA, but then it's your vocal DNA that you produce. And with this vocal DNA on this one breath, you have people who sympathize with it or sympathetically resonate with it, and you have people who sympathetically disconnect on it. But that's the other going disconnected on it. But you can also disconnect. If you are disconnected from your own feelings and your own sensation, then you start already singing these disconnections towards your audience. And also people who are disconnected, they love that. So when I started this practice.
As voice trainer.
As a voice trainer, as a voice developer, I was so astonished that people liked voices of people who were very disconnected, who were not connected at all with themselves, nor with with their audiences. And I said, "How come? How is this? How in heaven and hell is this possible?" but then also the law of sympathetic resonance. So people who deny a lot, who are very disconnected, they have also people in the audience who are very disconnected, and they love this much more than I could think, because they sing very well, but why are they so disconnected, and why do they have a full room audience concert hall being suicidal, and nobody hears that the guy or the lady is suicidal? And most of the time when you're suicidal, you are not really good connected to life in itself, and that's not completely wrong nor right, but it's just the way you are connected or not connected. That's more or less the law. And so then from that point on, we have this connection, and I had to if we go to Shakespeare, to be or not to be, he actually means to be connected or to not be connected. And that's actually the deeper meaning of to be or not to be. I seldomly have heard this explanation of to be or not to be from the famous words from Shakespeare in Hamlet, I presume. And so this is the basic law in also for me in cellular communication. Eh? So what we talked about with Otto is that there is a strong connection between the cells. But if people are disconnected, then the cells do appear with similar behavior, like cancer and all kinds of other creepy stuff going on in the body. What we call illness. And then the illness is there to restore the connection. That's the way we look at it. If we look at it from another perspective, you could also say that the illness is there to destruct the body and to let it die earlier than, and that could be also a reason. So we always view it from the life side, the positive side of life. Always look on the bright side of life, but if you look it from other way, it could look completely different. But we are not allowed to look from that other way because there's a taboo on it, and I don't like it either because it doesn't give me very good connective feelings or feelings of well-being. So I in my study on all these specific pitches from Pluto and Saturn, so these are not very nice pitches where people start to connect. So these are almost connect pitches that people automatically start to disconnect and start to do something else. For instance, and to see a similar image. So you are in a nice discussion with everybody, and all of a sudden, everybody gets a phone call and start calling with somebody else, and then you feel pretty disconnected. You are open and still in connective response with your people around you, and they are all calling with somebody else, and then you feel get feelings of denial, of unworthiness, etc., etc. So if we disrupt this feeling of connectedness very rough, people get ill. And that's what we train in singing. And we don't call it like this because the people don't dare to sing anymore. But it's just for obvious reason. People don't want to know this kind of information either because they feel a little bit awkward with it. But since you're listening to this conversation, you might be ready to experience some more on this field. So actually, the singing is more or less an pre-orgastic response, like the bird singing to mate, etc., etc. Singing is also an aspect of that, but it's not all around sex, and it's not Freudian. It's just being connective. It's just expressing your connectedness. So if you start to sing, you express yourself, and that it's nice that somebody would listen to you and that they could enjoy you and finally, after many years, make love to you and procreate yourself, etc. But in a smaller sense, just with this one in breath and you start singing on the one out breath, actually the whole thing starts already on this one out breath of singing. This we call it vocal expression. It's your vocal expression of life. Raise your voice, show yourself, and become a connector instead of a receiver or a sender. You become a connector. You can do both. But if you are singing only as a sender, almost everybody will reject you as a singer, because you are the best singer is the singer who can receive the most. What he's singing, and it's echoing back in sensations, feeling, etc., towards the singer. And nevertheless, the singer needs to be steering that process a little bit, because if he gets too much information in, he will lose his capacity to steer anymore. So it's like getting too many people in your car. There are only 100 people allowed in your car, and then all of a sudden 300 people are in your car, and then the car will break down and you can't steer anymore. So that's a thing a singer has to learn. But you start one-on-one, and if you sing for a baby, it's very easy, because the baby is very receptive for everything you do, and it's your best audience. And if the baby isn't responding, then your audience will also not respond to your singing. But that's another thing. So that's about the singing and the expression. So on the other hand, we have the breaths, our in breath, and with these in breaths, we come to all kinds of breathing exercises, from holotropic breathing. That's the breathing where you produce your own heroin, your own cocaine, your own you name it, and you can produce it, your own fantasy drugs, your own ecstasy, because all the drugs, pills and the substances we take, we can also produce with our own breath if we exercise it a little. It's very nearby. People think it's far, far away. But to give you an example, what most people will know, that's the hyperventilation syndrome. I don't know how you... Is it the right word in English, Otto?
Yeah, that'll work well. Hyperventilation, yeah.
Hyperventilation syndrome. So, and if you play consciously with it, so you produce your own hyperventilation in certain area, you get different sensations. Most of the time people know it only from the fear experience, that they are in fear, and that's most of the time because they have a lack of something. But you can also have the same hyperventilation when you make love to your partner and have your orgasm. Then you also start to hyperventilate a little, but then you have an orgasm. Don't get too deep in it, because there's so much more to say about it. And so that's a way to produce your own your own drugs, your own medicines to heal yourself. But also you can also over exercise and steal it a little bit from yourself. But that's just a little bit that can happen with your own breath. But most of the time people use the pills and the medicines as a drug, and that's much worse than you can do with with this conscious hyperventilation system, as that is called holotropic breathing. Now, what we did in the past with singers to get more and more in a certain expression, that for instance, when they have a song with a certain emotion in it and they are not connected with this emotion, then we start learn to breathe them, to breathe this thing, start to do this hyperventilation tour, and then they felt this whole feeling that they never have felt before. So that was quite emotional acrobatism for a singer. To come through the song into areas they didn't experience before, so that gives the song, this is it adds much more value to it for the listeners, because if somebody sings a song about an emotion they never had before, but they just sing it from their head and not from their heart and not from their emotion, then everybody who's acquainted with this feeling says, oh shit, it's another disconnected singer, let's go and listen to something else. And so that's an immediate response. It's not a conscious response of your audience, it's an immediate response, and they would like to get away from the singer then. So that's a bit, again, a little bit the singing part. Going back to the breathing part again, we have this let's start with the Iceman training. So then you start to breathe in a certain way that you build your oxygenation in your blood, so your blood get alkalic. If there's too little oxygen in your blood, your blood is base. Yeah, that's in English, base. Yeah,
alkaline.
Alkaline and base. Eh? That's the opposite of each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Alkaline versus acid.
Acid. Yeah. Sorry.
Or acid and base. Yeah.
Acid and base. Yeah. So with less oxygen, with more carbon oxide. Do I say it right? Carbon oxide. Yeah. In your blood. Your blood is more acid.
Carbon dioxide,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. And as soon as you start to apply too much oxygen, your body becomes more alkaline. And as we have our wealthy illnesses, they are most coming from too much acid in the body and too little alkaline. By putting more oxygen in your cellular system in your body, so the cells of your body, they can also breathe, but they have a much slower rhythm than our breathing rhythm. So for this, you need to have a high oxygenation of your blood, let's say 99%, 98, 99, so that your cells can breathe in. If you have an oxygenation of 93, then your cells can't breathe anymore, and you won't kill them. So be sure you won't kill them. But the cells, they become more acid also. And if there's more acidity in the cells, they have more ability to become cancerous, to say it on a cold ground physician like style, but just for you to make it more easy to understand. And so by getting more oxygen in your system, you can swim much longer under the surface of the water without breathing. So normally I can swim about 20 meters under the surface. And if I breathe this way, I can swim 40, 50 meters. And for instance, with free diving, yeah, that's from the diving sport, they train it and they can even go for 60, 70 meters. And they can just keep their breath for 3 minutes. And for me, 3 minutes is quite a while to get there. For 1 minute, it's very easy for me. In average, but 2 minutes I have to train a little bit, and 3 minutes I have to train very long to get it. But if my average oxygen level in my blood is high during the day and night, and my cells, all these billions of cells we have in our body, or trillions, I guess, they are loaded with oxygen, and that's what the Iceman Wim Hof says. You can load your cells with 10 times more oxygen than you usually do, and that's also is a prophecy to get cancer out of the system by getting your immune systems so tremendously high that any a germ or dirty animal that's trying to kill you that's creeping in is killed in a matter of minutes, so that your system, your autoimmune system, is not overactive, like we see with allergic reactions, but it's very active. So it's like it's a well-organized state with enough soldiers on the road, with enough police agents, and but there are, it's so well organized that the police agents they stay on their in their police office, and the army they stays in their how do you call that? I don't know it in English.
Barracks.
Yeah.
I always dislike these army metaphors for the healthcare model. Mm-hmm. They're so wrong.
Yeah,
what you're saying is that the cells re-empower themselves, and as a result of which the acidity, alkalinity balance is restored to that level, that there basically is no room for the parasites.
There is no need for the parasites to do their job.
Well, there's no room for the parasites, and there's no need for the immune system to do its job, because, in fact, all of the cells are doing it.
Yeah. So we are so clean. So let's say they all pray and read their Bible every day three times, and etc. So to create to give you an example of a belief system that does something in an area to keep things clean. But then we have all these other belief systems, and that makes it a little bit more difficult to keep it clean, etc., etc. So
yeah, also these metaphors are very tricky.
Yeah, they are very tricky. So,
let's stay clear of the metaphors and go back to what happens in the body.
Yeah,
because you're saying that it's a breathing technique, which brings in so much oxygen into the body that the oxygen can go fully into the cell, that the cell gets a near 100% saturation. Above 98%.
Yeah.
But as a result, the electromagnetic effect of the cells changes, it calibrates. And I'd just like to add to that the work of Phil Callahan, who took up the work of Horter and said that the oxygen atoms actually create a paramagnetic effect in the body. It streamlines, it coordinates, it integrates electromagnetic fields. And then, of course, it becomes very easy to understand why breathing will have such a powerful effect, because if oxygen in a way crystallizes, cleans out the electromagnetic field, then microorganisms which need a chaotic electromagnetic field to thrive will not have anything to live off.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell a bit more about the techniques of the breathing? Because the people listening to this, in a way, you've enticed them to think, well, this is really interesting, but it would be very helpful if they can actually do it. Maybe you can explain the exercise, maybe guide the listeners to it so that they can hear the whole story while they're at a higher oxygen level already.
Yeah, then it's even easier to adjust. It's actually very easy. You can do it in different ways. So if you do the Iceman brief, that's even a more easygoing breath. But what I trained people mostly in, also when I trained them, the Iceman. It's the breath of four phases. Mm-hmm. So you have the in-breaths, and then you have a hold. So you don't breathe in or out. You just keep it there. Then you have the out-breath, and you have a hold. And they have the same time. So, you go in, you have an in-breath of 15, or let's say to start with 10 seconds. Then the hold will be very difficult for most people when they start. So then you make your hold 5 seconds. The next breath, you do again the out-breath 10 seconds, and the other hold also 5 seconds. And you repeat it several times after each other. And then you start to make the breaths equal. So the holds are just, or they become also 10 seconds. So then you have 40 seconds altogether. 10% of 10 seconds in breath, 10 seconds hold, 10 seconds out breath, then 10 seconds hold again. That's 40. Mm-hmm. If you succeed that well, you start to make it a little longer, let's say 15 seconds on the in breath. And then, because you have trained it already, let's say a few minutes, let's say 5 minutes, it's very easy. You have already the 15 seconds on the hold. And the actual exchange of the gases, they are done on the hold, not on the in of the out breaths. There's the in and the out breath, they are working phases. But the holds, they are exchange phases of the gases. So, for instance, when I'm doing my running, I run, let's say, for I just have a normal breath. Actually, I'm not so running with my breath all the time. But just after I've done it, I start to consciously breathing, and then when I start to become a little bit shorter of breath, then I start to inhale and start to run on a hold. Let's say then I keep my breath for 5 seconds, and then the out breath, and then the in breath. So then I skip the hold on the out breath because I need my gas exchanges. only on the in breath, so then it's not very fertile to run and to, because then you have shortage of circulation. So depending on what you're doing, but we're talking about a normal way, and not overly exercising, just a normal way. So you train the four phases in an equal time, and after that, you will see that when your nails look a little bit more bluish when you started, you see that your nails become more reddish. And after doing this for, let's say, 15 minutes, you see that your whole hands are red and become a little bit, depending on your nerve system. But when I have this, my hands become a little bit wet, so I get wet hands. Because I'm overly oxygenated, so I start sweating a little bit more, and I start to do this, and so the whole circulation, your mitochondria of the cells, they start to produce more and more energy. So then you feel warm and more alive. So when the oxygen level is lower and the four phases are not properly done, you see that the exuberance of life is lacking in your body. You feel like when you feel sick. There's always, when you feel sick, I've tested it, it goes together with a low oxygenation. Although I did my breathing exercises, let's say 6 weeks ago, I was 14 days quite a bit ill. After 20 years, so I start to look at my oxygenation to see how it worked during my illness. And it was fascinating that a lot of times it was around 90, 91, 92, 93. Although I did my breathing exercises, I couldn't get it higher. So I was also astonished. So how stupid. I'm sick and I'm doing these exercises and it won't get higher. Why? What's the reason for this? And so I was also astonished by it, that the breathing exercises during the illness were not functioning as I always taught people. So yeah, it works in a normal situation, but not when you're really, really ill and sick. But that was my private experience in this. So in average, you could say yes, it works also with illness, and it's likely that I did not properly do the exercises well enough, etc., etc.
Yeah, but I'd like to add to that, Hank, that what you now say is so fundamentally important. And what you refer to now is that with the breathing exercise, you can pump up the oxygen level in the body and in the cells. In the case of disease, this might be difficult. Earlier, I already said that oxygen has this paramagnetic effect. It reorganizes the electromagnetic field. Mm-hmm. And that is also why, in case of disease, kinesiology or meridian balancing therapies can be very helpful, because they help to stabilize the electromagnetic field. Because at the oxygen level, you can see that the paramagnetic effect actually needs to organize the electromagnetic field. The meridian balancing does that as well. So yep. Then you see that we need to shift our attention from looking at the body anatomy with the bellows of the breathing to the body chemistry of the oxygen going into in and out, to the actual body effects, which that of electromagnetic field organization in the presence of oxygen. But then it is also clear that you need to assist the body at that electromagnetic level, as is done by homeopathy and kinesiology, acupuncture, meridian therapy, because then you can see that it is the electromagnetic balance which helps the body restore its acid-base balance. And specifically, remember that acid-base balance is determined by acidity versus alkalinity, but acidity simply means that there are more free electrons. So acidity is not a chemical change, it is an electromagnetic change. There's more free electrons. Mm-hmm. So at the moment that you realize that in health and disease, we are not working with the bellows of the breath, we are not working with oxygen of the breathing, but we are working with a cleansing effect, an organizing, integrative effect of the oxygen on the electromagnetic field. Then we can understand what we're really dealing with is the electromagnetic field and the free electron abundance. Evidently, you need to have free electrons for the body to be able to change. You also need to have bound electrons for the body to have structure. As the alchemists called it, dissoluo and coagulo. Dissoluo is to dissolve, which is having more free electrons. Coagulo, or to cohere, is to have more bound electrons. And what you're talking about now is the ability to, with the breathing, actually change that electromagnetic field. I just wanted to shift this understanding of the story, because it is so important what you're describing here with this circular breathing. And it's much more easy to understand what's going on once you see the connection to the electromagnetic field. I have another connotation which I'd like to add. In my experience, it is easier when you count the breath of these four cycles of the breathing, in, hold, out, hold, and so on, to not use seconds but to use heartbeats. For the simple reason that there is a relationship between the breathing duration, the breath duration, and the heartbeats. And so when you change the number of heartbeats, you're actually shifting the relationship between the animal and the vegetative body. You're shifting the dynamic from the animal body to the vegetative body. So in a way you go back from the season, the cycle of the seasons, because in the organs, in the animal body, the cycle of the seasons is built in what we know as the organ circulation. But at the deeper level, we are working with the vegetative system, which is a fractal system, which is like an antenna. So while at the animal level, we're working with cycles and circulations, at the vegetative systems, we are working with fractals, antennae. So in the animal system, we can hold a circulation and also an energy level, while at the vegetative system, we can tune it and retune it. And sometimes diseases are simply based on the tuning being at the wrong frequency, at too high up the tree or too low down the tree of the fractal system. And so that's where the shift of the count of the number of heartbeats in the breath cycle parts actually helps understand how we shift from the animal system to the vegetative system. And also it puts the connection of the duration of the breath into the body rather than into a clock. Mm-hmm. So it helps to connect to what goes on inside of us instead of what goes on outside of us. And I said, I'm really glad that you addressed these kind of breathing cycles and connect it with the oxygen so that we can connect it to that electromagnetic effect.
Yeah.
Because that's where we're then having the connection to the whole principle of math and musics of the electromagnetic photonic cell communications.
Yeah. And the tetrionic dots, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Can you please continue? Because I felt the need to
thank you. Add this notion of connecting it to the... It's very worthwhile because that this chemical exact things that I'm lacking. So please feel welcome and do so, because it gives me also new insight. Oh, this is the organization and that's unorganized and this is organized. And then all of a sudden the triangles and the tetrahedrons mm-hmm. are also more, they coming more into the view of the different aspects of all these kind of things. So that's very, very good to hear. So there's more structure and a better function and a higher energy flowing when the business becomes the oxygen makes your system more alkaline, and when it becomes more acid, it's more catabolic. Could you say that?
Catabolic and anabolic.
Yeah.
Anabolic is building up, catabolic is breaking down.
Yeah.
And when you look at it in relationship to what I mentioned before, the free electrons and the bound electrons, mm-hmm. Or the alchemical interpretation of the same, the dissoluo and the coagulo. Mm-hmm. So the anabolic or the coagulate is more bound electrons, mm-hmm. and the catabolic is to dissolve or mm-hmm. to have more free electron, more acidity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And evidently the whole principle of the body, which is also the basis of the story of freedom of choice, is that freedom of choice operates at the seesaw, teeter-totter balance between those two extremes.
Mm-hmm.
As Hans Selye, or Hans Schley, as it might be pronounced, described in his story of the physiology, the electrophysiology. Hans Schley was this man who studied the body physiology and created that insight about the fight-flight activity, which is the complement of the fear-faint activity. And he researched it at a level of the cortical steroid hormones. So he was looking at the adrenal glands, and in adrenal glands there are basically two types. One is the glucocorticosteroid, or glycogen is the sugar-based, like a plant-like, and the other is the mineralocorticosteroids. So they're the mineral form of the molecule. So at that level, we are not looking at the relationship between the animal and the plant, but we are quite literally looking at the relationship between the plant and the mineral. So what we are dealing with in his descriptions as well is the transition from dead matter, the minerals, to living matter, the plants. And so when he was looking at these activities for the adrenal gland, he realized that the glucocorticosteroids, I'd say the plant-like corticosteroids, activated the system, and it's called the fever-inducing steroids. Basically, those are the ones who dissolve the body, or and can thus, as a consequence, also dissolve the body membranes. So from that perspective, fever is meant to make the body more electric or more information based. So the fever state is actually to have the thought processes more active, while the mineralocorticosteroids, which are often used by doctors, they actually oppose that fever effect. So where the glucocorticosteroids induce the fever, the mineralocorticosteroids, they reduce that. And then, that's the essence of the work of Hans Selye, you see that the body operates by dissolving the body body boundaries, the system boundaries, or affirming that. And so while the doctors are looking at the fever effect and say, well, we should inhibit this fever, we should use the fever inhibiting molecules.
The loss of shape,
Well, in fact, when you, the fever inhibiting molecules, they fixate the shape.
It's
like you freeze the system.
Okay.
And the other ones, you heat the system, which is exactly what the alchemists describe. So when these doctors say, well, the alchemists poo-poo, they didn't understand anything. No, the alchemists were very accurate and on the dot of understanding that it is the electrical effect of the body, the disoluo, or the acidic state, or the free electron, let's call it the information cloud, on the one hand, versus on the other hand, the frozen material, fossilized, dead matter, cadaver state. So for them, they are very well aware that our body hovers between this frozen state of the mineral system and this agitated state of the electromagnetic fractal, the time fractal, as Susie Froebel calls it. And the whole story of Hans Selye then is about that balance. And when you see that he addresses the balance in the two types of steroid hormones, the activating and the inhibiting, then you can see that at that level where he looks at it, you can actually see that it is the relation between the plant and the mineral. And when we talk about it at a higher level, we see the same taking place in the relationship between the animal and the plant. And when you understand this principle, you can see that the same takes place at the level between the human or the conscious being versus the animal. And once you understand that, and this comes back to something which you said right at the beginning of the conversation, that when the singer has this disbalance within, he will find an audience with the same kind of disbalance outside. Which is the key of mathemusics, by the way. At that time, you were addressing the essence of mathemusics, that health states within us or disease states within us reflect on health states in society or disease states in society. So our humanity is literally the human turned inside out. And it is at this level of the alkaline and the acidic, or the bound state and the free state, that you can then see that it is imperative to stay in the center of that balance. And it's wonderful that how you take up this example of the circular breathing cycle, because in the circular breathing cycle, in the one part of the cycle, you empower it, you fire up the system, and the other part of the cycle, you cool down the system, you relax it, you stabilize it. But the balancing part is in the range where you can hold it. So if you have a very short cycle, you will never notice that there is that balancing out. And if you don't lengthen the cycle, which is what this whole circular breathing of yoga is about, then you will not notice that there is this balance. As you said, that is the area where the gas exchange takes place. But that is also the area where the body starts to calibrate the acid versus base balance. And as explained before, that is actually the relation between the free electron and the bound electron. And in my other work, you can see that that is precisely the field where freedom of choice needs to operate. So the larger you can make this breathing cycle, the more space you have for freedom of choice. Yeah, go ahead.
So and there are my clients who have these panic attacks or fear, living in fear the whole time. And there's nothing to fear, but they live in fear. And the only thing they need to learn, and a few things more, but to keep it simple, is that they start to learn these four phases of breathing. And then when they can do this type of breathing, there's too much oxygen in the system. So there's too much, they are too alkaline to get any more fear attacks. So it's very simple. If you are living in the fear paradigm, just take more oxygen in, and you will leave the fear paradigm, and you start to live in the love paradigm, or how shall we say it, in a more neutral state, love and fear. Yeah, so it's not no, that's just a word. I can't help it. I cannot make it more scientific than just to call it love, because we are all trained to be so damned neurotic, so stupid neurotic, and so stupidly unconsciousness is trained. So they never train you to breathe properly at school. They train you. They train some breath at yoga. They train some breath at tantra, and they train your breaths at singing. But as soon as you start with singing, they just do it on timing and very mechanical. So there's not so much awareness in it, and then you can do these breathing therapies, etc., etc. And then you learn all these kind of things. But then when I talk to people who are for long times in this kind of area, they are actually not much aware, or they're lacking a lot of awareness on the fact that if you put more oxygen in, people automatically will come become more independent, and freedom of choice will be raised by putting more oxygen in their cell, in their cellular systems. And a lot of autoimmune diseases, they don't disappear. But the psychological experience of the illness, it becomes more and more on the background. So with people who have tremendous headaches, you give them this kind of breathing exercise, they still have the same headaches. You can see it in the MRI scan, but the feeling of and dread of the headaches that's there all the time, psychologically, it changes. So I still have a headache, but it's not so compulsive anymore, and they start to live in another point, from another point of view, that there's enough oxygen, and there are much more nice things to do when you have a headache. And that's then a very strong headache, so that normal people like me, I would say I will die from this headache. I can't live with it anymore. I would become very depressed from it, etc., etc. But those people, they have this kind of pains already for 10, 20 or 30 years sometimes. So then the experience of the pain will be more not liked, but you can deal with it more. Like when you are very masochistic in this way. So what's the difference between a normal human being and a masochist? A normal human being can't enjoy pain that much. And the masochist trains himself to enjoy that pain and make some kinds of painkillers and all kinds of other oxytocin and other kind of and serotonin to be relaxed in that pain. And that's what I try to learn people who have this strong pains to just, I say it very simple because it's there's much more at stake then, but to keep it for this discussion simple, just learn these four phases and start to enjoy the pain, embrace your pain, and become one with it, and then these borders that are there with the pain can't exist anymore. Yeah. Although on a neural level, you can still see that the body is producing a lot of pain vibes. So it's not gone, but the experience is completely altered.
Yeah. I'd like to add to that, because that's what I like about these conversations. The one idea kicks off the other. And you're referencing to the relationship between fear and love.
Paradigms,
can be put in perspective to that breathing cycle. Had a small cycle and a large cycle, which is also related to the electromagnetic effect, having a lot of free electrons or a lot of balanced electrons. But it also connects up to the principle of the reflex system. In freedom of choice, you can see that on the one hand, there is freedom of choice, and on the other side, there will be reflex. I'd like to just add that insight to it, because many of these pain situations can be resolved quite easily, because often this pain is actually an electromagnetic effect or actually an electromagnetic field. You could probably say that it is a memory which is stored in a body, but which cannot be computed in the body. So we're still talking about free electron and bound electrons and oxygen as a means to mediate between the two, but now in relationship between a short, shallow breathing and a long, expanded breathing. So when you're in short, shallow breathing, basically you fall back on your reflexes. For the simple reason that when you look at the dynamics of freedom of choice, you have freedom of choice, which means that you have full openness. Say you're working with the electromagnetic field. Then you take a decision, which is the equivalent of specifying a system boundary, creating a distinction, compared to a cell deciding to divide. Then after that, you create a conviction or a belief. Compare that to a cell cycle or the organ cycles between the divided cells. And as a result of that, you then can create a reflex, a repetitive behavior. Look at the way cells form organs and maintain that structure and coherence of the organs. So once you see that cell activity, which is at the level of the photons, the electromagnetics, the chemistry of the molecules, but also the physical shape of the molecules, at those four levels, then you can also see that the same comes back in the relationship between freedom of choice and reflex. But that also means that it is the relationship between the open experience of being connected to the environment, or how what you described before, the disconnected experience, when an experience of the environment has been sort of locked into the body. And this is very typical, very characteristic, that for example somebody falls, for example a baby, when a baby falls and you bring the baby back to the situation where it happened and just let it experience what was taking place, then that separation between the thinking process and the body process can be restored. If that is not done, then that memory of the fall cannot be connected to what the body was doing, and it is stored in the body as a separate memory. And homeopathy and acupuncture and neural therapy, they all know how to deal with this, because basically they find that memory, that fixation of that experience of the past, and dissolve it. Neurotherapy, they use procaine, which basically blows up the electromagnetic fields. It discharges the charge cloud locally. Mm-hmm. With the meridian system, they move the electromagnetic field back into the normal metabolic electromagnetic circulation cycles. And in homeopathy, they inform the whole of the body of what's happening in the part of the body, as a result of that, which that memory is now shared by the whole of the body and is dissolved by the whole of the body and can be released. So when you see what happens at the electromagnetic level, these things are quite simple. But so then you can see that if that does not take place, if these charge clouds are not dissolved, if the memories are stuck and fossilized and crystallized in the body, then like a computer program caught in a do loop, as it would be called in informatics, that memory will just continue to exist while the body around it is not in that state. And there are very many examples of it, that people who have pains, if for example, I once met a man who had fallen off a chair 10 years ago. I redid the fall of that chair in 20 minutes time, allowing his body to relax at every phase of the transition. And after 20 minutes, for the first time in 10 years, he was relaxed on the floor because his body has been able to discharge the charge. Mm. If that doesn't happen, then these charges keep on being built up in the body, kept yeah. in the body. And that is essentially what the fears are. A fear yeah. is a memory of something in the past that went wrong, but was not resolved. As a result of which, when people enter into the environment which is similar to where that mishap took place, then that stored memory, which is still circulating around and sort of quite powered up, in the traditional languaging, you would say that is purgatory, or is the fear is the flames of the gate of that bit of hell, and the hell is that bit of memory sort of locked out, disconnected, in the body system. As you mentioned before, the singers where you can hear the disconnections in the voice are the people where they have these unresolved issues from the past. Kathy Kubler-Ross was into using the yoga techniques, the Tibetan techniques, for releasing these old charge discharges, to doing the old charge discharges. So when you see that, you can see that the fear is a localized memory which has not been integrated yet, which has not been dissolved, metabolized yet within the body. Any situation which is similar to it will reactivate it. But once you reactivate it and resolve it, let's say re-educate it, and this is how some of the spiritual techniques say, okay, let's give this devil a name and let's educate it, let us tell it what to do, reactivating the memory, reprogramming the electron flow by the metaphor of talking with the memory,
yeah.
and then bringing the memory into a different state. Once you see that it all happens at the electromagnetic level, everything becomes much more simple, because you can see that the fear is the same as a reflex. A fear is combined to a reflex. A reflex is an instituted activity which is based on a conviction. The conviction or a belief is the result of a decision, but the decision is always undoable by the use of freedom of choice.
Yeah.
So once you know that, all these people who have the pains in their body can be brought back to the moment of origin of that pain, because it simply goes back to that memory, it reactivates the memory, it recontextualizes the memory, and then that fear is literally transformed into love. Because
could you also write it down, Otto, this system? Because it sounds very clear to me, but it's hard to captivate it. and to work it out on a longer run, because it's very well summarized and it makes a lot of sense. And I think that's also, it could be also a part of Matha music healing.
Absolutely, and that's the whole reason for the Matha musics, that I realized that it is so simple, it works this way. And what I really like about our conversations is that the conversations bring this out.
Yeah.
So we can then both put parts of the puzzle on the table, as a result of which everybody can see what's going on. And alas, I cannot talk and type at the same time.
but
it is on record now.
Yeah.
And just to recapitulate it, to make it simple to type down.
Yeah.
It's a pity that you're dyslexic, as you said, so that you can't type while I talk. But I try to do it the other way around. That seems.
But also to put it on your website, as because I think it could be a major leap also for the awareness of people who are working into healing. To see this, to see these lines reflected, that it's actually that easy to get there, because most of the time we just have a few parts of this this whole line of fear, and then we do a little part, and then we skip the rest of it because we've done this part, and then most of the time the fear is obviously gone, but not totally.
Yeah, and the fear is gone totally once it has been metabolized. To come back to the origin of it, the fear is basically the memory of something which seemed to go wrong. You have survived it, so it went okay. But the body remembers it. I didn't really quite know what to do with this. Let's keep this into the memory records so that next time we can do it. But most people don't go down to the memory. They don't digest it. They don't learn from the mistakes. Yeah. So the next time they have that experience, the body says, oops, I still have an unresolved computation line here. I know this
circumstance. And you know the movie?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all about this issue, yeah.
Yeah. So it needs to be resolved by doing it differently. And one of the quickest way to resolve it is to tell the body to just digest it.
Yeah.
Use the metabolic cycle, which is the animal circulation, retune it to a different frequency, which is the vegetative system, so that it can compute differently, which is the cell system, the mineral system.
Yeah.
So our body, in that sense, is a computer. And once you see that fears are associated always with reflexes, that fears always point to reflexes which are dysfunctional, then you can re-edit the dysfunctional reflexes. You relive the memory. You say, well, this was gory, this was horrible. I cry, I weep, I do whatever I did at that time. And then you realize that you survived it, and that basically whatever you were doing at the time is not real, but a memory. But as you have linked it to the body can let go of the memory. And especially if you then have reactivated the memory and said, okay, now let's see how in the memory I can visualize a different ending. And that's where you use the spiritual techniques, where you use the shamanic techniques. Because where they say that they talk about angels and devils, or functional reflexes and dysfunctional reflexes, the only thing is that you catch the devil by the tail, bring him out, talk to him and say, okay, you're lost, you're flapping your tail about because you want to be somewhere else. Now, let me guide you to the place where you need to be.
Yeah.
And then evil returns into life, or live. Evil just says live spelled backwards. And once you see that you need to bring it back on the other side of the boundary, the minus sign becomes a plus sign, the negative becomes the positive.
Yeah.
And that energy which was stored in the memory banks becomes vital energy again. And that's actually a Chinese technique for rejuvenation. The more of these old memories you can find, and you already said that sexuality and orgasm is really important in that, and the Chinese are very aware of that. So the more of these old memories you can dissolve, and then all these frozen lumps of electric information frozen into the body, they become vital electromagnetic fields again. So all of these places in the body where it couldn't work, it was frozen, it was fear, it was pain, that suddenly comes back alive. And that's why the Chinese say, this is how you work the rejuvenation. You digest the past, liberate the old devils, educate them, turn them back into angels, and have a happy lifetime.
Yeah.
In the circle breathing, the circular breathing, you can then see the parallel that people who are fear-based, which means that they live in the past, which means that reflexes determine their being, they are on the frozen side of the spectrum of the body. So they live in the past, they live in a fossilized being. The wife of Lot is part of that story. Mm-hmm. And the other side of it is that that can be brought to life by realizing that now you have freedom of choice, use it, digest the reflexes, see that they're just based on a conviction, take a new decision, because you do have freedom of choice. And in that sense, you can then say that the fear, which is associated with the reflex, is then turned into love, which is associated with enthusiasm. But in the line of what you presented in this conversation, it is the difference between a very small breathing cycle, which is self-centered, let's call it that, it's locked in, there's no outside going on, it's just a repetitive wheel without space or time for connecting to anything out there.
The connection becomes very poor. Otto, shall we start again?
Okay, let's. I'll come back.